Welcome everyone to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We're a comedic, social, and current events podcast where we give you a nerdy outlook on what's going on in the world today, giving you a look inside the inner conclave of nerddom, and we're here to take over the world with our nerd imperium. So all hail the Currently Nerdy Empire.
All hail.
Thank you, V.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We give this podcast to you free every week on currentlynerdy.com and on iTunes. So please feel free to rate, review, subscribe, and share a page and podcast to all your friends, family members, and loved ones. Because you truly don't love somebody until you have spread the gospel of Currently Nerdy. Hallelujah. Holla back, little homie. Amen.
Hallelujah.
We are your hosts of this wonderful, amazing, illustrious podcast. My name is Diz, and I am your pop culture / sports nerd, which means I can tell you that Zayn Malik's new album is great. Beyonce made a whole bunch of diss tracks about Jay-Z, and
why Jay-Z? Isn't that her husband?
Yeah, there's a new album
called Lemonade.
Oh,
is that what Lemonade's all about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's kind of hinting at like Jay-Z cheating on her.
Bro, what's the times, bro? Come on. What the hell? Like, everyone keeps talking about Lemonade, and I'm like, when did like Lemonade become the new drink in town? And must have been like a new alcoholic. I was like, why does everyone keep saying Lemonade? And then it goes, this is the tweets I see. Lemonade, period. Dead. I don't know what dead means.
Well, dead means like it was great.
Like, why do people say that they're dead?
They're literally dead, bro. They can't even.
Yeah.
And I could tell you.
I've heard the can't even. That's a white person. That's a white
person. Also, yeah, you know, I mean, they killed it, so they're dead.
White teenagers, white teen girls say that.
Yep.
I can't even. And I'm can't like, even. Well, can't even what?
Like, literally can't even.
But the dead thing I didn't get. So thank you for letting me know that Lemonade is an album.
It also apparently.
But they're still married, right?
Yeah, they're still married.
It kind of validates Solange and her craziness as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Solange. Oh, yeah, and I can also tell you that Conor McGregor is officially ruled out of UFC 200, I think.
Why is he ruled out?
Because he wouldn't do press conferences, so Dana White kicked him off.
Yeah, and then he said that he retired on Twitter, and they're like, all right, well, he's out of UFC 200. And then he's like, well, I'm not actually retired. And they're like, well, it's too late now.
And then he says, I'm back on, bitches. And then Dana White goes, no, he's not.
why is that all about?
He's kind of fucking around. Look, we'll get into this later. Okay. Ali, tell him who the fuck you are.
I am Ali Aolomi, the classic nerd of the group. I was into things that are nerdy before nerdy suddenly became cool, and I bring you all the background information and history and nerdy stuff. B.
Good evening, friends. This is V Tran, your comic book movie and travel nerd. I cover the things that Ali and Diz do not.
So, were you asking why?
Why is he going back and forth like that?
Because he didn't want to do the press conference because he does way too many fucking press conferences.
Okay, so from what I understand, he was training in like Switzerland or something.
Iceland.
And they wanted him to basically fly back to the States to do press conferences for this upcoming fight at UFC 200 against Nate Diaz. He got upset because he didn't want to basically pause his training camp to fly back and do these press conferences. Mm-hmm. They said, no, you're required to. This is part of your job. So then he kind of responded with that whole I'm retiring, thanks for the money shit. Mm-hmm. As him kind of saying, you know, kind of throwing it back in their face. So they basically went, all right, well, he's off the card then.
Well, good for him for standing up to the man. But
and then he goes,
always wins.
He basically goes, his response was like, I've been responsible for bringing the numbers lately for every single one of my fights. I've been doing more press than any other fighter in the organization. I should be able to, they should be able to carry on with all the press without me while I train for this fight. And they just kind of went, no, you're supposed to do press because that's part of your job.
But here's the thing, all right? The UFC hires these guys as independent contractors,
mm-hmm.
all right? But they make them wear a uniform. They make them do like all sorts of like obligations because they're UFC fighters. Mm-hmm. The reason why they hire them as independent contractors is so they won't start a fucking work or fighters union.
Yeah, but that's a common thing amongst like these kind of bigger companies, mm-hmm. right? That have kind of autonomous individuals working. YouTube's an example of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone on YouTube is technically an independent contractor, but they wear YouTube gear, they support YouTube.
But do they have to wear YouTube gear?
They don't have to, but they're like, if they go to YouTube conventions, they're
yeah. So they're like, the fighters are required to wear Reebok.
Yeah, they can't wear anything. Things.
They can't wear. Yeah, they can't wear anything with their own sponsors.
But like they're going into sponsors. A ring that's owned by the company, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's why. That makes sense. I'm not saying it's a fair system. It's a fucked up system. But that's a common Individual capitalism works like that.
Yeah. So he's like, look, man, I got to fly from fucking Iceland. These other guys are flying in from Stockton and, like, you know, New York, whatever. It's not a big deal for them to, like, miss a weekend. He's like, look, I'll try to accommodate me. I don't want to fly to Vegas and waste a week of training. Let me come to New York and film whatever the fuck you need me to film and do whatever the fuck you need me to do. But let me do it in New York because I could do that in a weekend. I could get there on a Friday, leave on a Sunday. You know, like, whatever. And I can get back to training Monday. I lose 2 days of training, big deal. If I come to Vegas, it's a longer trip, right? It's a 12-hour trip as opposed to a 6-hour trip. And I lose a whole week of training doing shit that you don't really need me to do.
Did he expect Dana White to be fair?
I don't know. Dana White's whole answer was, I couldn't do that because it's not fair to everyone else. I had other people fly in from, like, Brazil and stuff and Stockton.
But at the end of the day, Dana White is all about making money. He doesn't actually care. He's stupid.
ESPN did a stat and with Conor McGregor on UFC 200.
Yeah, but then Conor's response was kind of, I retire.
Yeah, he was kind of I don't know. He was kind of trolling, half trolling. He's been trolling the UFC for a little bit, like the past week.
But now he's out of the,
the
card. But
so,
here, check this out.
Really, who got the troll?
The trolling end was the UFC because ESPN did a stat. With Conor McGregor on the card, they make $45 million more than they do without Conor McGregor on the card.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm just saying, Conor McGregor is their biggest draw by far and has been their biggest draw in history.
He also just got his ass handed to him.
That's exactly why people want to watch it. People want to see what's going to happen to him after he lost.
Yeah, or if he's going to come back because the guy that he's supposed to fight was the one that handed his ass to him. So, yeah.
By people, you mean everyone other than me.
Yeah.
Well, I literally don't care.
Although, what is the 197 card looks really where they're in Brazil? All the old Brazilian legends are fighting on
it. The next? No, the 198.
198, yeah. 198. Anderson's on there. Shogun's on there.
Zero fucks.
Nogueira's on there.
Big Nog.
No, Little Nog. Minotauro.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's right now, that's actually the card that I'm looking forward to.
Hojerio.
Yeah, Hojero. Yeah,
Minotauro is the big one.
You know, it's Minotauro, and then Minotauro is Hojerio. Yeah,
both very famous Mortal Kombat fighters. Minotauro.
That's Motaro.
Yeah, not Minotauro.
Whatever the fuck.
That's the Brazilian.
My favorite card would have to be the card that defeats Donald Trump.
Here's the thing, all right?
And even then, like,
any card.
Can I say this?
That defeats Donald Trump.
I think Donald Trump winning these primaries is just going to show how shitty the Republican Party has been the past fucking, 12 years.
The reality is that the people who vote in primaries are not always general election voters.
Yeah.
People who vote in primaries and caucuses are there from a certain demographic, generally. The reality is, for example, statistically, Donald Trump polls really badly with the general public.
Mm-hmm.
His unfavorability is pretty bad with the majority of the United States. But after today or Tuesday, when you guys are hearing this, or whenever it finally shows up on iTunes.
Yeah, fuck you, Apple.
Don't say that.
Yeah.
As I use your products.
I think that we will find out that there's another person who is also quite unfavorable with the general public, and that is Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
She is, unfortunately, for better or worse, and part of it is sexism that plays into this, she is quite unliked by people.
Yeah.
She is an unlikable personality. So, and sexism does play a factor. So, both her and her husband are really gaffe-prone,
mm-hmm.
but, his gaffes are kind of, for whatever reason, the public sees them as somewhat endearing.
And humorous.
Even though they're not. Like, when he lectures black people about Black Lives Matter, that's not endearing, right?
Yeah, but it's there's something so lovable about Bill.
But people love Bill, right? Whereas she does the same things, and she's hated for it. Right? She's considered also to be really fake as a politician.
Yeah. Here's the thing. So, there was a video going around where it's like, watch Hillary Clinton pander to the black people, right? Because she was on the Breakfast Club, which is
She meant the hot sauce. She said the hot sauce.
But here's the thing. Hillary Clinton is notorious for loving spicy foods. She was asked this question by someone maybe 8 years ago.
Huh.
And she was like, I always keep this and a miniature bottle of Tabasco sauce in my purse.
But her response, it's not that they asked her about it, and she's like, is it working, right?
Yeah,
she's not what I would consider a strong campaigner. Mm-hmm. So like where Obama is a very charismatic campaigner, right? Yeah. He's very good at getting the people going. He's charming up there, especially when he loosens up.
Yeah.
Right. There's like he has little moments like where he, like he brushes his shoulder, yeah. like things like that that make or like impromptu singing
yeah.
that make him really charming as a campaigner. She doesn't have that.
No.
Right. She doesn't have that. Also because she because we tend to view female politicians. In with a kind of double standard,
mm-hmm.
she's hit with that quite a bit. For example, she was recently in New York and she got this like special ice cream made for her, like a victory ice cream. It's like chocolate with brownies on it. And someone asked her how many calories it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And no one's asked Bill how many calories he's eating,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
he was quite notorious back in the day for his appetite,
yeah.
right? So she does get hit with it a lot. My big issue with her, of course, is her is not that she's unlikable. I don't really care
for foreign policy.
Her foreign policy.
Yeah.
She's more hawkish than any of the Republicans.
I'd agree with
and
that.
And people, I mean, there's a great historian that just recently published a Huffington Post article in response to...
I thought you were going to say there's a great historian who wrote a blog about this. His name is Ali Olami.
As arrogant as I am, yeah. I don't think
you're not above saying that.
I don't think I've ever actually said that.
Yeah, but you're not above saying
that. No, I'm certainly not above saying it in any way, shape, or form. I cop out to it, but...
Fucking I'm rich.
But I've never actually said that. I am somewhat humble.
You will eventually, though. Let's face it.
There was a great historian that responded to, like, there was this article that came out about Hillary Clinton's foreign policy and how it's very robust and muscular. And these were, like, the terms they used.
Why are these in masculine terms?
They always use masculine terms for, like, the war. It's very fascinating when they do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, this historian, calls out, he goes, if by muscular and robust you mean the disasters that are Iraq and Libya and Afghanistan, then yeah, we don't want that. And he's absolutely right about that. The problem is not just that she has really bad foreign policy. People keep talking about her foreign policy experience, right? Mm-hmm. But the reality is that her foreign policy has been quite disastrous in a lot of different areas, and not just Libya and Iraq, which were horrible military interventions, but also her handling of the Israel-Gaza conflict, a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
In fact, Kerry has been more effective as a Secretary of State, even though he gets less...
to deal with?
Yeah, he has, even though he gets less credit than she does, he's been far more successful as a kind of top diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas one of the things with her is that despite her so-called experience and despite all these disasters is that she's doubled down.
Mm-hmm.
So she hasn't gone, I've learned from these mistakes. I look back on Iraq and this is what we would do differently. I look back on Libya, this is what we would do back, what we would do differently. She represents a particular style of liberalism in America, right? That's what I consider white liberalism.
Right? Okay.
It's all about, they don't see it from the perspective of people of color and certainly not from the perspective of the third world.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true progressives, right?
The progressives. Yeah. What do they call it? They don't call it the third world anymore. What do they call it now?
They're called the third world. You can call it the third world. Or the global south.
There's another word.
Developing countries?
There you go.
Yeah. That's developing countries is actually somewhat offensive.
Oh.
Yeah, because it means they're underdeveloped. Yeah. Which
third world
really
comes out of a Marxist terminology.
Okay.
Yeah. Specifically, Mao really puts this idea of a third world.
Mm-hmm.
You can also call it the global south, right? The
global south.
The global south. So that includes like India, the Middle East, South America, etc., right?
Mm.
Or what's known as South-South connections.
Uh-huh.
The problem is not that she's... Her foreign policy is horrible. As a white liberal, she represents the kind of worst of white liberalism, right? She's like, yeah, equality, yeah, as long as it comes at the cost of brown people.
Yes.
Mm. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's this type of the difference between white feminism and feminism for people of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So like it's this idea of like we need to save Muslim women. That's a very common...
Yeah, save them from the hijab.
Right. And she hasn't outwardly said that, but a lot of her policies reflect this kind of, I would say, myopic worldview and one that is very committed to global inequality.
Yeah.
It is. It's one that is imperial at its root, militaristic in its practice, and destructive in its result.
But here's the thing that kind of trips me out, bro. All right. So maybe I'm too young to remember this because the first time I was able to vote, like legally, was when President Obama was running for office.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember there being like crazy things that happened like they did in New York where like voters aren't able to vote and they're...
It does.
But I don't remember this is it to a that common... level. Maybe because I'm too young and I don't remember.
It is.
It,
you're young, but I'll tell you this. Every season, every time, and Reza and I have talked about this, is that like almost every election...
Did you see what I did to him today?
No, what did you do?
He asked about some random Afghan guy. He's like, hey, does anyone know who this is? And I just made up some bullshit name. I was like, yeah, it's Hikmatullah Sarmati's fan club chairperson. And he's like, who is that? He's like, I Googled him, and it's, I was like, you know, he's the guy who runs the thing with that girl with the hair. And he's like, what are you talking about? He's like, I just Googled this guy and I saw the Afghans of Minnesota. I'm like, yeah, bro, he's the head of the Afghans of Minnesota. If it wasn't for him, there would be no Afghans in Minnesota.
Someone in the chat?
Yeah. And he's like, you could have just said that, asshole. I was like, it felt much better for me to make you run around chasing this fake random person while I'm sitting here taking a shit and sending you this chat. He's like, what? This person isn't real. I'm like, nope. He's like, where the fuck did you get that name? I'm like, I don't know. It sounded foreign enough.
That's really messed up.
It was fun.
Poor Reza is even less connected than I am to the Afghan world, so don't use that against him.
Like, you don't know Afghan things. He's like, what do you mean Afghan things? I said, Shola, and that's it.
That's messed up. He loves Shola.
Now, yeah. Thanks to me. You're welcome, Reza.
I was talking to Reza about this, about how like every election season, it's like the delegates and the Electoral College. It's like somehow people forget about it.
No.
And then when it comes out, like, oh my God, yeah, know, our really. Democracy. And like you realize.
It's only been 200 years.
You know? We've only been doing it this way this entire time.
Yeah. No, but the thing that's like tripping me out is like you see.
Yeah, but like you don't remember all the voter fraud panic back in Bernie's election.
I remember 2000 with the butterfly
even
the Bush, ballots
even
and
under
shit.
The Obama.
Like, oh yeah, or
no,
like,
we remember the voter frauds, like black people couldn't get the vote because there were long lines and all sorts of.
Or it's all like voting, like poll stations were like 8 hours away.
Florida was particularly notorious.
The hail hanging Chad thing.
There was something.
There's always some type of. Now, the reason is because we have a very flawed voting vote.
There was some thing I can remember hearing about during when Romney and Obama were going at it. They kept bringing up some fucking pack. I forgot what the name of it was, but they were claiming that these people were putting like fake people, like putting like dead people on like.
I do know that when Obama and Romney were, there was the polling station was a big issue. There's always kind of an issue, right? There's the issue with provisional ballots. There's an issue with registration. There's an issue with people getting purged. Things like that happen.
God, people getting purged?
Yeah, and then it gets highlighted, right? And then again, in the 24-hour kind of news cycle, it becomes a big deal. Everyone panics about it, and everyone's like, ah, fraud! Yeah. That Hillary Clinton has stolen the election! And then, I see it on Facebook all the time. Maybe the whatever 1,000 votes she got are the ones that got purged. And then come, you know, the next day, it's forgotten.
There was thousands of people in Brooklyn who weren't able to vote.
Yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it is fucked up.
And in Arizona,
this happens a lot.
One of the pollers flat out said, Only the Democrats like voting ballots were the ones that got screwed up. None of the Republican ones.
Yeah, this happens to both sides, and
I figured
it's always something gets messed up.
It's a conspiracy.
There's
bro.
Two things that happen. One, we have really outdated technology when it comes to voting. We have really old technology. Even when I go to vote, that machine is fucking old. Like
the thing?
Yeah, the fucking
little twister,
the dial on that thing.
Yeah,
but that shit.
And
is
then
like,
you push the button.
Then again, though, it's like we haven't updated our nuclear safety systems either. Yeah, they're all run on floppy disks.
But then there are also humans who run it. So there's human error.
I was one of the guys that ran a polling station.
Oh, see?
I volunteered.
Oh, dear Lord.
Literally, you answered your own question of why this problem. Yeah.
Is that
why George W. got elected for a second?
No,
this second
is the Obama term. I wasn't old enough to vote for that one. I couldn't volunteer. I volunteered during the Obama.
Stole the election from Romney.
I
stole the election for the
Rich Uncle
Obama.
Romney. You took it from Rich Uncle Romney.
That. It was when he was going against the
McCain.
The guy who got caught. He's not a hero. You know that one.
McCain's
a hero. I like my heroes not to be caught.
He got captured
after the elections. Like I think, or after the primaries. I think it's kind of given now that.
I think it's safe to say
Trump is gonna cinch the nominee. Now there's a chance that they'll still do a contested, convention.
Weren't they talking about because like Kasich and Cruz are like making a united? They're making their own axis of evil.
They did
and trying to take on.
What is the word they use?
Trump.
Seceded.
What they did is they've created an alliance so that they will divide up the remaining states and will campaign. So like they both agree, like we can't win all the states. Uh-huh. Let's divide them to keep them from Trump. So we'll see. I mean, they're doing. It's a little too late. The reality is that it's
a little too late.
Whatever. We're gonna see what happens with Trump. Clinton was more than likely.
I just got a notification. Hillary Clinton won Connecticut.
There you go. Right. So she cinched it all. He got Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. The reality is that mathematically, there's nothing he can do about it.
So the question is now, though. I mean, we pretty much assume other unless of course.
What if he wins California like crazy numbers?
Still won't. Yeah, it won't still be enough. It's enough. We're just gonna assume just now
mathematically that, yeah. He's not there.
If Hillary goes against Trump, we're gonna assume that Hillary pretty much wins it though, right?
Well, yeah, like, I mean she wins. She doesn't win as easily as Sanders does, surprisingly.
Yeah, yeah.
Sanders does a lot better than Trump.
People say like when they do like exit polls or when they poll like the general public, when they ask like who do you think is more trustworthy, Bernie Sanders or Hillary?
People Clinton? Like Sanders. People the problem is Sanders. There's two things that has happened here, right? First and foremost, people don't think he can win.
People yeah. keep calling him a socialist. Right.
People, it's the socialist thing. Surprising, I think we've gotten to the point where it's not as scary.
For yeah, you know, only really dumb people are the only ones that like right. look at a word like that and automatically assume yeah. all the worst, right?
So
like,
I think he could. I think it's the unelectable thing. Like you hear, I hear a lot of people say,
"Yeah,
I like him, but I don't think he can win."
What say? It's like it's almost like they literally lost it for him before he even had a chance.
And
like,
the second thing is the media really screwed up. Right, mm-hmm. and Amy Goodman, who runs Democracy Now,
did they screw up or did they intentionally do this?
No, they screwed up. You can make the argument that it was intentionally done because of the result of
the way
the system works.
Let's not forget. Remember that first Democratic debate. We were watching a debate at Momo's,
mm-hmm.
Momeds in L.A. and. We all thought that Bernie did really well, and we thought that he, you know, in our eyes, he won the
Here's the thing, though. There's two things that's going on. The one, a lot of the kind of media execs are also people who've given a lot of money to the Clinton campaign.
Exactly.
But the other thing is that the way the media system is run, right, based off of sensationalism, name recognition plays a huge role.
Uh-huh.
So we know, for example, and Amy Goodman points this out quite brilliantly about how pundits have ruined this election. Because she goes, it doesn't matter whether you turn to MSNBC, CNBC, Fox News, CNN. The person you'll see on every single channel is Trump.
Yeah.
He's gotten more free airtime. He hasn't had to run ads that much in comparison to everyone else because he's had so much free airtime compared to all the other Republicans and especially in comparison to Sanders.
Yeah.
Clinton already has the name recognition. She's well known nationally.
Yeah.
When you say Hillary Clinton, people know. But Bernie Sanders was, as much as he was around, he was a newcomer.
Yeah.
No one knew who he was. Mm. So all of this worked against
him. This time last year, he was like 70 points down.
Let's be real. He didn't do as well as he thought he was going to do.
Yeah.
His claim of a political revolution didn't happen, right? It just didn't happen. He didn't pull the kind of votes that he needed to do. More importantly, I think we've reached this kind of level of cynicism with our politics. Right? This is a very cynical generation. Right?
Yeah.
It's a generation that's also less inclined to revolution and rebellion than any generation before that. We are not a particularly well known for taking stands on things.
No. Yeah.
Our protests are shorter, our attention spans are shorter, focus on social justice issues are far shorter.
So pretty much they can wait us out on everything. The
systems can wait us out, right? So like people forget that our generations before us stood up for a variety of different things.
Yeah.
Our generations do not. We're not revolution prone. I think that's part of the system, the way the system
works. Let's look at it like this. Look at the 60s and 70s, the Million Man March. You had all
the gay rights movement, civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam movement, right? Yeah. All these movements were quite big. But Wolfson talks about this. Paul Wolfson writes a book called Digital Rebellion, and he talks about that the nature of a revolution and the left has changed because the left has always been decentralized, right? That it takes charismatic leaders to kind of move the movement forward. But those charismatic leaders have vanished because we now turn to the digital to organize rather than those individuals who bring us together.
Yeah.
So as a result, the groups remain decentralized. They never coalesce in the way that they should. An example of this is the Arab Spring, right? A lot of people talk about the social media, like Twitter. Thanks, Facebook, for the Arab Spring. But they're actually missing what really happened there. The Arab Spring didn't happen because of social media, but because social media shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was people were driven out from the streets and they went home and they started protesting online.
Uh-huh.
They started tweeting and Facebooking and all that. The government made a tactical error. They shut down the internet.
Mm-hmm.
They shut down access to Twitter and Facebook.
You can't do that.
So as a result, what did people do?
Everyone
went
out.
Back to the streets.
Yeah.
Had they not done that, they would have remained protesting online.
Yeah.
So by shutting down the internet, it forced the movement from the virtual into the reality.
So, yeah. what you're saying is what Bernie should have done was he should have shut down the internet. He should have gotten the phone with Bill Gates and the other guys that know the internet. What Bernie needs is
he needs, as lovable as he is, he needed the type of grassroots movement that Obama really created.
Yeah.
The ability to take what's on the internet and then put it out there.
Yeah.
Obama campaigners and the people who worked in his campaign are some of the most effective when it comes to this.
They went door to door.
They talked to people. They got people to register. Now, the Bernie Sanders, the Bernie bros are quite enthusiastic, but they haven't been able to create the same type of grassroots movement.
Productive grassroots movement, I should say. Like, when I'm at work, I'll sit there and I'll talk to my coworkers because, like, I'll see him, like, liking all my Bernie Sanders posts and, like, doing all that. And I'm like, dude, this guy Bernie Sanders, I didn't know about him until you did. He's cool. He's the one guy I'd vote for. I'm like, cool. Are you registered to vote? Nah, man, my vote doesn't count.
Yeah.
So it's like a combination of, like, our generation's cynicism with the type of technology that we're dealing with leads to the fact that we are less inclined to revolution and rebel and protest than any generation before us. Or when we do, they tend to be short-lived, right? They don't tend to be long. We're very good at what's known as clicktivism.
Okay.
Right? Which is clicking activism. We create change.orgs, petition.org. We create those.
Yeah, I signed hella ones.
And we do a lot of those, but we think by doing that, that's enough.
Is that not?
Well, yeah, we're the set it and forget it generation, I'd like to say. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, I decided to make a GoFundMe.
We share something.
Yeah.
But then we don't do anything.
Raise awareness, bro.
Right. But that's the problem. Raising awareness is only the first stage.
Yeah.
Raising awareness is only one part of it. And every movement in the world requires moving beyond raising awareness to actual policy change.
This is ridiculous.
Classic revolutionary theory. All revolutions are based off of two things: a war of positions and a war of maneuvers, right? And the idea is that at one point you have to have a set of ideas that raise awareness, that challenge, that offer an alternative, right? An alternative vision of the world. And then you have to actually enact the alternative vision of the world.
It's like, you think Susan G. Komen got big because all they did was raise awareness about breast cancer? No, they campaigned.
Yeah, they signed up with the WWE and then Bernie Sanders
doesn't do this well, unfortunately. Bernie Sanders is very good at talking about the vision, right? But when it comes to, like, asking very specific details about his policy, he tends to fall apart a little bit, right? And so he hasn't been able to pivot to that point. Yeah.
And he also needed more boots on the ground, as it were.
Not just more boots, but he needed more productive boots. He needed the type of campaign people that Obama had. And he doesn't have that. He has the awareness people. He has the people who will share it on Facebook, who will go and
He's got the Dizzes of the world. He doesn't have the Alis.
He's got the clicks, right? Yeah. I mean, how many times did he win those online polls?
Yeah.
But how many of them were then creating these productive campaigns? It's like, this is the problem.
People like me are lazy, man.
What's it just people like you? It's like, it's not laziness, it's apathy. Right? Uh-huh. It's that the difference is that we've become comfortable.
Okay.
Right? Anything that doesn't, as long as it doesn't interfere with our comfort, we're willing to put up with it. And this is, I've said this before, and this kind of ties into the discussion of Beyonce that was going on the Facebook.
Lemonade.
I didn't know it was about lemonade. I thought it was just about Beyonce. I was going to make a comment, but I said it.
They wanted to hear from you, fuckface. They asked. I wonder what Ali has to say.
I haven't been online. I just saw the comments and I'm like, oh, this is what I would say. But now they hear me via Pugs. So maybe I'll put it up tonight.
Yeah, put it up.
But my idea is fundamentally that Marx was wrong.
Huh?
Marx was wrong. Religion is not the opium of the masses. Media is the opium of the masses.
Oh, you said this before.
Yeah. And this comes out of an idea from Horkheimer and Adorno, that it allows us, right, because of the role of media, it allows us to become apathetic. As long as it doesn't affect us, right? So as long as we don't see dead babies, we don't do anything.
Yeah.
So this is the Alan Kurdi effect, I call it.
Yeah,
we talked about this in my class. I'm teaching my kids.
So about talked about it in past podcasts before.
Yeah. Too. I go, as long as you don't see dead babies on the TV screen, you're not gonna be moved to do anything.
Well, it's like, because you know, there have been refugees for years.
Yeah. So the Syrian civil war has been going on for like 5 years plus.
Yeah.
Right? And
in Africa.
Refugee crisis has been going on for that long, right? And no one knew about it or even cared about it until Alan Kurdi showed up on the shores of Turkey.
Yeah.
Right? When his dead body was splashed over the world, that's when people are like, oh, and this is what media is really good for, right? Media is good about raising awareness. But the problem is, what happens when that awareness doesn't stop? So, like, we've all become aware of Trump, but now they're, like, rubbing Trump in your face.
But here's the thing with Trump, man. I think Trump is because the Republican Party has fucked up so much that the Republican...
It's the like, karma.
They don't trust them. It is. Think it's about it.
Frankenstein
like, monster. CNN keeps doing these exit polls, and fucking like 80% of the people that they give the exit polls to say that they don't trust the Republican Party anymore, or they're ashamed of the Republican Party. They feel dissatisfied with the Republican Party. So what happens? You get this fucking crazy demagogue who comes out and says...
Demagogue. Well,
demagogue. Yeah. Whatever.
Bernie Sanders mispronounces it too. He says demagoguery.
That's where I got it from.
Yeah, yeah.
I took his words.
I figured that's where it came from. Because he said it recently. I went,
yeah. God, that's damn it, Uncle Bernie.
Uncle Bernie, stop.
Yeah, damn it. I learned from you.
Demagogue.
Okay. So you get this demagogue, and he says all these crazy things like, the establishment hates me, but I'm going to do what's right for you because the establishment isn't good for you. They hate me, and I'll help you go against the establishment.
But you see, this is the funny thing. We were talking about this the other night, right? Is that the difference between capitalism and communism.
It's like who you want to get fucked by.
It's like who you want to get fucked by, right? Yeah. In communism, you get fucked by the government, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Screws you over. It's like, you get one bread a day. You got to work for it, right? So like, they make sure you're fed, but you don't have any access, anything like that. So the government screws you over. In capitalism, the government goes, don't trust, the businessmen go, don't trust the government, but the government at the same time is screwing you over in the same way that the businessmen are.
Yeah.
So you have the business, you have the Republican Party who's literally, you know, shoving a lubricated horse cock up your ass. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, you have the same thing with businessmen like Trump who claim not to be, by the way, that was a reference to anyone who watches it in the thick of it. I'm not just a vulgar person for the purpose of being vulgar.
Sure.
But it's a political.
You're not
Diz. I'm not Diz. It's a British political drama. And he uses the term when someone's getting screwed over, shove a lubricated horse cock.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was quite fitting because we're talking about politics. Yes. If you guys don't know what it is, shame on you, Peter Capaldi, thick of it, or In the Loop, really, really funny.
In the Loop?
In the Loop.
Oh.
Loop. It's really, really good. Uh-huh. So the fact of the matter is both businessmen and politicians are the establishment.
Yeah.
But the politicians aren't. You can't trust him. And then he's going, you can't trust the politicians.
Yeah, really.
So you're sitting there.
And let's face it, both of them are getting rich off of us.
Both of them are getting rich.
Here's the thing.
Republican Party got so much free airtime thanks to Trump. It's brought in new members thanks to Trump. In the same time, Trump is getting all sorts of... He's selling steaks and water.
Yeah,
no. This is like he's running campaigns like, you can get some Trump steaks and Trump water.
But here's the thing with Trump is like, if you ask like Trump supporters who like somewhat are smart, like not very smart because they're voting for Trump. I know it sounds like an oxymoron,
but they exist, but they exist.
They're very few and far between.
Emotions but, override you know, reason.
Yeah. But they're like, look, the reason why I'm voting for Trump, I don't fucking agree with him with this build the wall thing. I don't agree with him with these like, don't let Muslims in. It's that he's not taking any money from these PACs. He wants to fix the government on his own. He doesn't want.
He's not taking money from the PACs, but he's part of the same system of the PACs.
Yeah. Here's the thing.
He's a businessman.
I shared a video a few weeks ago about like this guy who went out and like he pretended to be Muslim for Trump, and he was like, the same reasons that these people are telling me that they're voting for Trump are reasons why they should be voting for Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, but okay, that's because both groups of people are emerged out of that same kind of disenfranchisement with the system.
Exactly.
Like I said, this is a generation that is very deeply disenfranchised and very, very cynical. It is. But that's not worked in Sanders' favor in the same way that it's worked in Trump's favor.
No.
Right? It hasn't. And partly because Trump represents the ultimate kind of Frankenstein's monster of this. He's both the repository of all Republican conservative frustration, disillusionment. He's also the ultimate repository of the system itself. So he's getting it from both ends, right? He's a product of the system. He's also a product of the frustration of the system,
mm-hmm.
right? He's literally a reality TV star.
Yeah.
But he's anti-establishment, supposedly.
Yeah.
So he's getting all the flow of hate. Yeah. Is going into it.
Not to mention, I mean, his name is branded on all sorts of shit. Yeah, like
for the Democrat side, that didn't work. Right, yeah. She's got the product of the system thing.
Yeah.
She's got the name brand. he has the frustrations with the system.
Bernie, yeah. That yeah, is.
Bernie Sanders, yeah. That is. So I the reality, I said it a week ago, though I don't know if anyone heard because our podcast wouldn't go up.
Damn you, big
the government. Yeah, Sanders is done.
Sanders it's a shame, but yeah, I have to agree.
And his the idea that him moving her to the left, utter bullshit. This yeah. is like progressives are trying to like convince themselves. Look, I'm going to vote for her because there is no other option, right? And not yeah. voting is handing it to the Republicans. That's yeah, the reality yeah. of it, right? Yeah. And this is too delicate of a situation to.
I just wish Elizabeth Warren ran.
Yeah, seriously, she's yeah. my. To be honest with you, she's more. I don't like Bernie Sanders. Is all right, I'm a Sanders.
I really like Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth yeah. Warren is the my ideal candidate. Again, not perfect, but. Yeah.
No, she doesn't even want to come. She yeah. doesn't even want
to. I love her tweets to Ted Cruz. I love her tweets to Trump. She talks
hella shit.
She does talk shit on Twitter.
She does not give a fuck.
She does not. She is not afraid. Here's
the thing. She's not afraid to at your bitch ass either. She won't subtweet you.
No, she doesn't yeah. subtweet. She doesn't even just use people's names. She adds them yeah. at Ted Cruz, yeah. at Rio yeah. Donald Trump. Yeah.
She comes at you, bro. She just throw no shade. She's right in your face.
Yeah, like multiple. Man. She tweets through.
That's the kind of people you have to respect.
No, I have an immense amount of respect for her.
Elizabeth Warren's awesome.
She is. When you see Elizabeth names, when you see Elizabeth Warren's name, you put some respect on it.
Some what?
You put some respect on it.
Respect.
You don't play with her
You're
name.
You're saying respect.
Respect
like,
on it.
Like speck with an R.
Yeah. Yeah. R-E-S-P-E-C-K. Respect.
Respect.
Put some respect on it. You playing with my name, Ali.
I think she
I
just.
I ain't talking to you no more.
I think he's just.
Oh my.
Did he just threaten
when
some
when
type
you
of.
You say my name. Put some respect on it.
Some sexual disorder.
I'd have known where you was at. I could have pulled up on you, but I thought that was
gangsta. What is he referencing here?
I don't know what he. I don't know.
Put some respect on it.
Who are you referencing?
Birdman.
No.
Birdman. Who's that?
What happened to that boy, baby? Who's from Birdman? Cash Money Records.
Bling bling.
Not a clue.
So he's the owner and CEO of Cash Money Records, who is popular because of Lil Wayne and Drake are signed to. Young Money, which is a part of Cash
Money. Yeah, that's nice. Culture industry.
Yeah. So he went on
the only Breakfast Club. You'd be the only one that would know what that meant, Ali.
He went on the Breakfast Club, which is the same place that Hillary Clinton said, hot sauce.
Yeah.
Right? He went on there, and before he did the interview, he walks in and he goes, y'all keep playing with my name. Anytime you say my name, you better put some respect on it. Stop playing with my name. Stop playing with my name. I'm coming here and tell you and your man.
You know,
face.
It makes me very uncomfortable when you mock when you imitate people's accents and their
from the south.
It doesn't matter. It just makes me very
put some respect on it.
Makes me very uncomfortable.
That's the saying, bro.
Speaking of really powerful women, Melisandre. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
From this moment on, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones, and this is going to be
we gave you an almost 40 minutes of non Game of Thrones
and
spoilers.
Let's be real, this is going to be standard for the next 10 weeks or so, right?
Yeah, really.
We're going to talk about Game of Thrones a lot because we're watching it.
Yep.
So, thoughts, gentlemen. What did you feelings? Like when you watched the episode, what was your first feelings? And what were your thoughts?
The first feeling.
You don't just synopsis in it. Just what were you? What was your feelings?
I was very indifferent.
Okay.
I kind of like, I went into this season like optimistic, but at the same time I was also pessimistic.
Are you
like,
over it a little?
No,
bit?
No, I'm not over it. I'm still gonna watch the fucking shit. All right. Look,
I hate watch. You know that, right?
Yeah, I've been hate watching the WWE for years now. All right. it's not gonna stop me from watching it. But like, I'm watching it and I'm like, I hope they fix it. Right. And I'm like, but they're probably not going to. So for me, it's like, it might get fixed, but probably not. So I kind of was indifferent. This episode, I know where it pissed you off. And in my mind, when it pissed you off, I was like, oh, this is going to piss off Ali. But it didn't piss me off as much because I didn't read the book. So I don't really care as much as you did. So I think that's what kind of got to you. For me, I was just like, eh, whatever. It's just the fucking first episode of the season. Whoop-de-doo. It's setting up fucking storylines for the rest of the season.
V. Your thoughts, your feelings when you
you know, I was okay with it. It also doesn't help that I you know, my first season watching it was season 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not suffering the same fatigue I think that you guys might be from the characters and everything. So a lot of these characters are still relatively fresh in my mind. I enjoyed the first episode for the most part. I mean, there was parts where I didn't understand. I didn't know why they did that. Or why they made the choices they did, but overall, I think it was a good start of a season. You know, it gave you it planted seeds.
Yeah, planted seeds
for WrestleMania. And it also quashed a lot of theories, you know, right from the get-go.
For me, I think the fatigue has really set in.
Yeah.
And I think probably because, and I'm not a book purist, I've said this before, right?
Mm-hmm.
An example of a series that diverges from the books and does all sorts of different things.
Lord of the Rings?
Is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Harry Potter doesn't include a lot of things that are in the book. Or includes, for example, one of the figures that is actually, that people always forget, and you even forgot about, is Peeves. Yeah. Peeves is this poltergeist that causes all sorts of troubles in the book. He's never mentioned once.
That's right.
Movies.
Yeah, you remember nearly headless Nick.
Yeah, and even then he's in a couple, and then that's it.
I think he was in like the first two.
Right, and there's a whole like backstory behind, you know,
the ghost. Shit.
How about Hermione Granger's activism for the house elves?
Yeah.
Right?
I remember that.
So there's a lot that goes on in the book that doesn't show up in the movies. But the movies are faithful adaptations done by people who are respectful of the source material.
Yeah.
Right? So as a historian about being respectful of the source material. My frustration is with Weiss and Benioff. It's one, their history.
They're the writers of the show.
Yeah, writers. Okay. They're the showrunners.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And executive producers, all that shit.
These are the people that were behind the Wolverine origins. One of them was.
Oh yeah, no, they silenced Deadpool.
Yeah, so like that Shock. gives you a little bit of a hint.
Shame.
That gives you a bit of a hint of what type of what they bring into this. So my frustration has always been that they're not faithful to the books, and the further they move on, the worse it's become. Because
I blame fucking George R. R. Martin's lazy
piece. Well, he hasn't finished the books, but the problem is also that they've made minor changes that then end up being a lot bigger later on. They kind of snowball into other things. Yeah. They also, because of the medium that they're working with, rely on sensationalism.
Okay,
right. What made Game of Thrones really successful in the beginning? Which for a lot of people, it seemed to be like a really subversive fantasy. It actually is not that subversive. There's a lot of fantasy that's gritty and dark long before George R. R. Martin came around and decided to kill off good old Ned Stark, right? Mm-hmm. Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn by Tad Williams is one of the darkest and in fact inspires George R. R. Martin. There's even one called Mary Gentle. She writes a book called Grunts that's actually from the point of view of orcs.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Nice.
So who doesn't know why they're working for this evil force? And Robin and Hobbes, Assassin's Apprentice, is actually George R. R. Martin wrote the blurb for it. Mm-hmm. And he wrote the blurb for George R. R. Martin.
Mm.
It's older than George R. R. Martin, and it's way darker. And it inspires him, right? Even have some of these even have literally a big giant wolf and men in all black as a company. So like they inspire a lot. So there's nothing particularly subversive about it. But what it does is it makes fantasy mainstream.
Yeah.
Right? It brings fantasy so that it's accessible to everyone.
Yeah, everyone and their mothers are watching.
Yeah.
Now that can be a good thing.
Uh-huh.
Right? It makes it more popular. But when it relies on mainstream, it also means that it has to adopt some of the worst of mainstream's tactics. And one of that is cheap thrills.
Yep.
Right? So sex and death, sudden death, right? Yep. That don't actually further the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, epitomizes what happened in this first episode.
But here's the thing. I want to say that in seasons 1 through 4, mm-hmm. all the things that they did made sense. Season 1, killing off Ned Stark, it made sense in the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Season 2, was that when they did the Red Wedding? Or was that season 3?
Season 3, I think.
Season 2, what was the big fucking thing there? They killed somebody.
Season 2 was the big old, the battle.
Okay, whatever. Battle works.
The Battle of Blackwater.
Okay. There you go. Works. Went with the story. Season 3, they fucking kill off.
But that's what I'm saying. As it's progressed, it's gotten worse. It works.
Season 4, even, you kill off fucking Joffrey's bitch ass, and then you kill Oberon Martell, who like everyone liked. But it progressed the story. Like, it made sense.
Most of these deaths, a lot of these deaths had something to do with the books themselves, right? But they don't always do it that way. They kind of diverge, and as a result, because they may not have included a character or they killed a character off earlier, it ends up making a bigger change later on.
Yeah. Well, right? Look, season 5, like, what was the big one that they killed? And everyone was pissed about it.
Yeah.
They killed fucking Stannis' daughter.
Yeah.
Sure.
Now, that could have been George R. R. Martin giving them a hint, like, oh, by the way, next book, I'm going to kill this girl off. We don't know. Like, we don't know what he's going
to... But, like, it pissed us off.
It did. And I think the problem also was that Stannis, it seems so different from Stannis' character.
Uh-huh.
Right? But who knows? Maybe that's George R. R. Martin. I think for me, the and obviously we've already put the spoilers in effect, right? For me, the killing of Durran or was really bizarre.
That didn't make any sense to
it
me.
It seemed to me like, I mean, they had shat all over
Dorne.
The Dorne plotline last season.
Yeah.
And then I thought, there's no way it could get any worse, and I was wrong.
Yeah, and then they pissed all they over pissed the shit.
Pissed all over it this time.
Yeah.
And I think it was a really ham-fisted way of maybe trying to say, oh, we're going to reclaim women power. But they don't get that in, for example, the books. Arianne, who's not in the show, uh-huh. right, the daughter of Durrann Martell.
Princess
has this plot to put Marcella Baratheon on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Dorne, women can inherit. That's a way more subversive
thing
than killing off Dorne. Like, see, it's not Durant, because it's not shock and awe. Whereas killing off Dorne is all a huge shocking. Thrill.
Yeah.
Right? First of all, you killed off the only
brown guy
on the show,
minus the Dothraki
and the black guy
Hotel. Right. Not just the only, but he's also one of the best Middle Eastern actors. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Alexander Siddig.
Yeah.
And they just killed him off. I'm like, okay, well, what a waste of a great talent.
And they just cheapened the character
Character. Whereas in the books, the plot is about putting Marcella on the throne, and Oberon repeatedly says, "What? We don't hurt little girls in Dorne." Clearly, his kids didn't get that message.
Yeah.
Right.
Or his somehow
that message didn't translate. Everyone knows that they don't hurt kids in Dorne, apparently, other than these people.
Yeah.
Then they go about to defend, to avenge their beloved father, right, and lover. How do they do that? By killing off his only remaining and beloved brother.
Yeah. And nephew.
Excuse me?
That was gruesome, by the way. Yeah. I didn't, because I watched this episode twice. I watched it once Sunday, and I watched it once with you tonight. I did not expect that Sunday.
The spear
through the back of his head.
Well, of course, it's gruesome.
It was disgusting.
But I don't understand. For me, what I didn't get was
gross.
Was how, like, what was the rationale there other than sensationalism and this kind of cheap, like faux attempt at making women bigger?
I can only imagine that's actually really what they're looking for, because it doesn't really go within the spirit of what they're looking for within the books. The thing is called the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
It's playing a game. It's all about intrigue and politicking.
And Durrann Martell is known for being an amazing player.
Yeah.
Now, okay, fine. You wanted to go differentiate from the book. That's great, right? You didn't want to do the Dorne plot of Arianne. And in the books, what happens is Durrann says, look, this entire time I've been working to bring down the Lannisters. And they all kind of join as a family against the Lannisters. So clearly they completely misread and misinterpreted the Dorne plot, right? But it doesn't even make – forget that. It doesn't even make sense within the logic of the show itself.
No.
Yeah. How does this fit with the Dorne we know via Oberon Martell? How does this fit with the type of family loyalty that we know from the Martells? Like it doesn't – like something is missing there. How do you how is it that you're going to avenge your father – by killing his beloved brother? This is the same father that spent all his life seeking revenge for his beloved sister.
Yeah.
Clearly, this is a family that, like, they love each other so much that they will kill.
Yeah.
Right? But you're going to go, like, the logic, the internal narrative logic is missing.
Yeah. You also brought up an interesting point. It's like, how did the Sand Snakes get on the boat with...
The Sand Snakes are in Dorne. Somehow they managed to get on the boat.
Because you see them on the dock watching the boat go away, and then in this episode, all of a sudden they're on the boat with him.
Yeah. This is also
kind of a weird
to
thing.
Me, this reeks of cheap thrills that doesn't even make sense narratively, right? So fuck the books.
Correct me if I'm wrong, V, you watched the season
I watched the finale and then I watched the new episode.
In the finale, was Trystane not on the same boat as Bronn and fucking
He was Jamie? On the same boat as...
Because there was only one boat that left the dock.
Yeah. So then how the fuck did Trystane get killed on the boat?
I think maybe we're supposed to interpret from that Jamie sent him back.
Like, but why would Jamie send him back, and why would he...
Probably because he didn't want to...
If he found out that the love of his life just got murdered... Why would he be sitting on a boat coming back to Dorne?
Yeah, I don't understand it exactly either, to be honest with you.
Fucking love of his life.
I'm not exactly sure what again,
continuity,
something narratively is missing there. There's like, it's as if these writers don't know what they're doing, and they don't. And I think this is the reason this show has done so well so far, or it's two things. It's got the sex and the gore too, right?
Yeah.
But they have phenomenal actors.
Yeah. Yep,
right.
Yeah.
So Lena Headey's
portrayal of
Cersei in this first episode,
I felt bad for her.
It's fucking phenomenal.
I know.
She's talking about
flipping the script.
First of all, unexpected, right? You expect her to scream, shout, do something, yeah. But she's like, she's resigned.
Yeah. She said, "I thought if I could make something so good, I wouldn't be a monster."
Yeah, what a beautiful way of
feel for her.
You really do. And I mean, the acting is phenomenal. You see Jaime Lannister, who has spent so many seasons trying to, like, moving towards redemption, going back to this, like,
yeah,
it's us against the world, fuck everyone else, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I get where he's coming
from. Yeah, I get where he's coming from, too.
You think about it. He's literally, daughter died in his own hands.
Beautiful portrayal by Sir Davos again. Like, yeah. All of these, even Sir Alistair, right? The guy who plays Sir Alistair.
He's a great actor.
As much as you hate him for killing Jon Snow.
I killed Jon Snow.
You know that he plays the line so well that he's not quite a villain.
Yeah.
He's, like, the most unlikable good guy.
Ish.
Or the most likable, but he's not a likable guy either.
But it's like, understand.
You understand. If all you do is shift your perspective a little bit, you go, okay, I see where he's coming from.
Yeah.
If I've been living in a tradition that tells me these people are evil and they're rapists and pillagers and murderers, and I've been fighting them all my life for centuries, all of what we have, and then all of a sudden my leader lets them in as a betrayal of everything we stand for, I get where he's coming from. Even though I hate him and I disagree with him and I think he's villainous, he plays that line, that gray line.
That's because really we know a little better.
Even his speech he gives, right? He's unapologetic.
Yeah,
and he's also
literally just says it out front.
But he's like, I was loyal to him.
Yeah,
yeah. I never once disagreed.
It's actually, like that one thing is like he's actually a straight shooter in a sense, right? But you're like, you're a straight shooter for the wrong side, though. Yeah. It's like, you know, who pisses me off is that little kid.
Ali.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that little bastard, little Shia LaBeouf, even Stevens looking motherfucker. Yeah. I hate that kid.
Yeah, he is a little bit bastard.
I can't wait till he grows up.
No, man, his family got killed in front of him.
Yeah, by the wildlings.
I still hate him.
Great acting, phenomenally done.
Yeah.
But what's missing is good writing to back it up.
Where is Bronn?
Good direction.
Bronn just disappeared. I don't know.
Bronn just kind of disappeared
off the boat. Yeah, that's what I asked. Where's Bronn?
It's like you would think you'd be hearing him singing or hitting on somebody something.
That doesn't mean the show is a complete disaster. Just for me, I think the fatigue is set in. I'm a bit tired with it. I think the tricks that used to work aren't working anymore.
Yeah.
You can't use those little tricks anymore. And all writers do it, right? It's like, oh, things have gotten bar. Throw in a fight scene, right? Throw in sex, right? Sex, and it's literally
show some boobies.
A calculated decision. Now, this becomes a problem because when you start making those calculated decisions, it takes away from the story. The perfect example of this is Lord of the Rings versus The Hobbit. Lord of the Rings, interesting, relatively stick true to the books, even though it diverged in a lot of ways. Yeah. It tried to capture the spirit of it. An example of this is the elves showing up at Helm's Deep. Never happened in the book. Yeah. But it's a moment that you go, I can deal with this change.
Yeah.
But you look at The Hobbit, and all of a sudden you have this faux love triangle between Legolas, Tariel, and what was it?
Feely or Keely,
one of them, right? Yeah. And it's completely, you could tell.
It's like it was really forced.
It's this faux. Like a completely calculated decision on his part to bring in a female and to put in a love story because he needs a love story in order to attract women into the series. Like, you see what I mean? That's what happens when you start using tricks, too much of them, it ends up taking away from the story. And I think that's what we're getting with Game of Thrones. Now, maybe that this season can somehow redeem itself. For me, the Dorne plotline has been shat on. It's been ruined. Great job at taking an opportunity to really explore other culture, explore difference, explore a different type of family, right, than what we're used to on Westeros.
Yeah.
Good job on fucking that up.
But also, it's like when you think, it's like, well, I mean, the Dothraki are in there now.
The Dothraki are
in there. Let me ask you something. Do you know exactly why they just happened to have an army of horse guys where Daenerys was in that area? They just happened to.
Well, they tend to wander about.
I know, but they just.
All over Essos.
Like, she's just kind of standing there by herself, and then this army of horse guys just kind of shows up and takes her.
Dragon,
and
yeah.
I don't know.
And their
He'll
dragons
probably show up Drogon. Again.
Yeah, I'm no doubt. I mean, this is. They had to basically start a lot of different storylines, so it cut normal
That's
Game
That's the
of
only dragon's
fashion.
Name I
but
remember.
But of course, the biggest reveal is Melisandre.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So we find out finally that she's super, super ancient.
Yeah.
They hinted at that. To be honest with you, it surprised me. I didn't think that was coming.
I know. Yeah. Because me and Diz already saw the episode.
Yeah.
Well, when it happened, and then you made it a really interesting comment.
Yeah. Unintentionally so.
Because you're all like, you know, they've said that she's supposed to be a lot older than she lets on, or something like that. Like,
no,
she,
no,
looks,
she, looks,
she looks, she looks, she looks younger in the books, or something like that.
In
right?
The books, she's really young. She looks like in her 20s.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like they chose an older actress for her.
She's beautiful. Yeah.
And then Diz started laughing,
and then I said,
yeah.
"Melisandre's got one, the probably the best body in the whole series."
I know. We're sitting there now, what's interesting
is that Melisandre's okay. I like that. I thought it was really well done. It also was an interesting decision to make her kind of get into bed, because making her do something so mundane after she's kind of revealed herself really humanizes her.
Yeah.
It's also one of those moments, because you always see Melisandre at the top of her game.
Yeah, yeah. Right? She's always like confident.
This is, by the way, the most subversive thing that Game of Thrones does, and this is, I've put forth this before. It's actually not all the killing that's been done before, all the gritty violence, all been done before. It's actually the play between the gods and magic. This is the most subversive thing they said. The gods are always taken as kind of a granted in fantasy, that they're real. And in this series, we think they're real as well, because the series, the especially the books, is from what's known as a third-person close point of view, or a close third-person point of view, right? So you know what the person knows that you're reading. So like if you're reading the Arya scenes, you know what she knows. You're not omnipotent.
Yeah.
You're not omniscient. You don't know all. As a result, because they believe the gods, you believe the gods.
Yeah.
But what if this entire time there are no gods?
Yeah.
It's just magic. Mm-hmm. What if she's putting forth this idea, all that power comes from her? Mm-hmm. It's sorcery, right?
Yeah.
What happens then? It's like, that's what we're playing with. And I think this introduces
what happened
it.
To the one-eyed dude?
What one-eyed dude?
The fucking Norman, Lady Stoneheart, Trogan Brogan. He has like a
weird... Beric Dondarrion.
That's the one.
I don't know.
Trogan Brogan.
They decided, I don't think, to continue that storyline, because that was going to be the Lady Stoneheart bit. I think what's going to happen is probably Sansa's going to take
the turn. They were saying that.
We'll see. What's interesting is we'll see how the gods play out in this, because what you know, I think you notice in this episode, and they finally did it because the book emphasizes, is that Melisandre may be a rogue Red Priest.
Yeah.
Because there's the rogue priests are doing this different thing on Essos. On Essos, they think Azor Ahai is Daenerys.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because he had the red priest that was preaching. Yeah,
so you hear the red priests are all backing Daenerys because dragons are fire embodied.
Yeah.
Right? Melisandre's the only one that's thought Stannis was Azor Ahai. So you start to see that there's something off with Melisandre. You're not quite sure what's going on, what her agenda is. And this is, I think, one of the most interesting things about Game of Thrones. Because what if you find out all these things about the gods and prophecies is all made up?
Mm-hmm.
That it's actually just fanatics with power.
So
because all of her power are things that non-faith people can do. The shadow binders can summon shadow monsters. They don't worship any gods in Ashai. Right, so like the pyromancers can control fire. They don't work. It's like the gods here, I think, are the most interesting thing, and how they're going to play into the dragons and the White Walkers is going to be a fascinating.
Yeah, I'm still waiting to see what happens to Republican Bernie Sanders.
Not Republican Bernie Sanders. He's evil version King's Landing Bernie Sanders.
The High Sparrow.
The High Sparrow. I heard someone call him that. He said he's a less nice Bernie Sanders. He hates the 1%. No, he's not a Republican. Because he hates the 1%.
Yeah. And he also Republicans don't wear rags like that.
He's just crazier than Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. It's possible to be.
Yeah, well that because he's
He's demanding to see the transcripts from Marjorie Tyrell. Release the transcripts.
Confess. What happened? Tell us what happened in Benghazi. In Butghazi.
Oh, no.
Oh, Diz.
The line, bro.
Sodomy joke.
Yeah. In a preview for next episode, we see Jaime confronting the High Sparrow.
Yeah, so we'll see how that's going
to
happen.
About, like, are you sure you want to kill?
Well, the trailer shows like kind of a battle between the King's Guard.
Yeah.
And so we'll see how it's
going to happen. And then you have Robert Strong. Also, you know,
I think it's Mountain. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, I'm fatigued. Oh, I'm still gonna watch the show.
Yeah,
just because I need answers.
Welcome
now.
To my world, bro. That's what I've been doing for years.
I'm definitely hate watching at this point in time.
See, not me though. See, because I haven't. I don't know much of the series.
I've been really watching the WWE for years, and I still purchase all their shit.
You know what's crazy is that I expected Arya's stuff to be a little bit more prevalent in the first episode. I thought there'd be more, but they really didn't do. They basically just showed her and then pretty much did that.
Yeah, I don't really.
I'm almost worried that in this season, because they're gonna and they didn't show any Bran.
No.
So
no, but Bran is supposed to be. That's another one where we're going to see magic do, I think, interesting things this season, and I think they're going to be more comfortable with using magic in that way.
I think with Bran, though, I think what might happen and what I'm kind of worried about is that they're going to start featuring Bran more, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. But Arya might be relegated to the Goku. What I call the Goku role.
What the fuck is the Goku
role? The Goku role. So at any time in Dragon Ball Z, everyone had to wait for Goku because no one can fight off anybody properly. Yeah. But Goku was always doing something, like doing sit-ups or some shit and like thousand times gravity.
Can we just point out that like Goku used to do the fucking spend all episode powering up for something?
Exactly.
I hated that.
So I'm like, is this Arya just
Dragon Ball Z.
Is this like Arya just going to the gym for the next 9 episodes before she actually does anything?
Hyperbolic time chamber?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, like I'm like capsule core, like space thing.
She's in like faux heaven trying to find like
running across the wall trying to get resurrected again. Like I'm worried that that's what they're gonna relegate Arya to.
I'm worried. Yeah. I did hear that Arya's from the actress that the her storyline is actually a lot harder this season.
Okay.
She's going through a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Macy Williams.
I'm looking forward to the season. I don't have any doubts that I will continue watching. I just, you know,
I'm upset.
They ruined the Dorne storyline. I'm turning in really right now for Melisandre because I'm fascinated with her as a character.
Yeah.
There's actually something I may be releasing. I'm not 100% sure yet. I'm still kind of working through it. Mm-hmm. About women, sorcery, and prophecy.
Shameless plug.
Yeah, shameless plug. Shameless plug. And speaking of shameless plugs, also watch our Game of Thrones YouTube video.
Yeah, bro.
And on that note, Diz, why don't you take us out?
Yes, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy. Go in there, like our page, share our post, write in our wall, send us some cool stuff in our DMs, but put some respect on it. We're on Twitter @currentlynerdy. Hashtag AskCurrentlyNerdy is always going on. This week's hashtag will be #RespectCurrentlyNerdy with a CK instead of a T.
I'm gonna punch you in the face.
Sorry. @currentlynerdy on there. Tumblr. currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. Go on there, follow us, reblog, repost, write some notes, do all the good stuff that the Tumblrites do. YouTube, new video, Game of Thrones season 6 theories and predictions. Go on there and thumbs them the bums, subscribe, watch the video, tell us what you think is going to happen this season. Instagram, currentlynerdy on Instagram. Go on there, follow us, like our pictures, write some comments so V thinks he's special. YouTube, we had just said. So iTunes, rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes if they fucking put our shit out there. I swear, these fuckers, they just don't like us sometimes. Yeah, yell at iTunes, put Currently back on air. And if you can't find us on iTunes, currentlynerdy.com, great way to stream our podcast. If you want to get a hold of V, tell them how you can get a hold of you.
Of course, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VY. TRAN214. You can also find me on my website at thesandwichslayer.com. Ali?
You can catch me on my website, alilomi.com, AliOlomi.com, or on Twitter at AAOLOMI. Diz, how about you?
You can find me everywhere at Dizbulla, DizBullah.
So next week, I think we're going to be talking a little bit about the issue of gender-neutral bathrooms and the kind of controversy around the laws. So be sure to tune in. Thank you for tuning in this week. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you.